Valuetown is a production of HearthSim. Find out how to support Valuetown by going to patreon.com/valuetown.
This is our town.
Welcome!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 171 of Valuetown. I'm Chanman V. Gara, how'd you like our new intro, man? Is it cool?
It's PogChamp.
If it's PogChamp, yeah.
So much better than the old one.
I know, God. I've been meaning to change that forever now. It was just literally killing me, like, watching that intro every time.
I was just waiting for the name change at the end of the intro.
Yeah.
Right. Super mega.
Yeah, I still need to tweak it a little bit at the end so that fades into us a little bit more. But anyways, guys, that's enough details behind production. Welcome to episode 71. It's just the two of us today, but we've got a lot to talk about. It's never a boring week in the Hearthstone community, and the things that we decide to complain about are just amazing sometimes. But today we're gonna be covering the Tavern of Time event, the patch that came out with it, news, DreamHack Austin, probably touch a little bit on HCT Seoul because it's coming up. Or HCT, is it HCT Korea, is that what it's called officially, or is it Seoul? I forget that actual name, but all the players are over there right now. And then we've got some Q&A at the end of the show. So if you have any questions that you want to try to get to us, you can go ahead and tweet Valuetown GG, and we'll try to read out any that we get via Twitter. But we've got a couple already via email. And, that's always great. You can always email that to valuetown@hearthsim.net. I have to remember it sometimes. Before we start too, I want to let everybody know that we are sponsored this week, or at least this episode sponsored by Dollar Shave Club, which is an awesome website that sells a lot of things that you need in your bathroom, that keeps you looking very nice and clean and smelling great. We'll talk a little bit more about it later. And of course, the show is an HSReplay.net show. So get the best stats at HSReplay.net. Gar, what have you been doing this week, man, in terms of Hearthstone?
Grinding Hearthstone, trying to get legend, but yeah, sometimes you have these downswings. I just can't hit it. Today I got to rank 1-5 stars twice.
Yeah.
Had very good win rate, but yeah, one game short.
That gatekeeper, pretty rough, man. What deck have you been playing today?
I played today's Even Shaman, Recruit, Root Hunter. I call it the Jurassic Hunter now because it's so much cooler. The dinosaurs.
Yeah. It's amazing how popular that is now. Jeez.
And a bunch of Q-Block. Pretty strong still. Kind of stupid to see how powerful it actually is. Played a bunch of Big Spell Mage, Shadowwalk Shaman, and Odd Priest.
Dude,
as well.
You just named like 10 decks, man. Like, meta's great. The meta is a lot of fun. You're never going to be bored, that's for sure. There's so many choices. And one of the things, actually I didn't even include in the topic, we'll definitely cover meta a little bit too, but the meta is still very widespread. It hasn't settled very much, to be honest. I mean, I think you have different decks at the very top depending on where you are, but for the most part you still got like a 3% win rate difference between like the bottom of tier 2 and the top of tier 1. So meta looks very much similar in terms of at least how many decks are in the are viable right now. So good. I think that's great. Yeah.
We actually have the most unique meta of all times. Because we have a meta where control decks and aggro decks are bad.
Are bad?
Are bad, yes.
Okay.
We're talking about tournament setting.
Oh, tournament setting. And, yeah.
And yeah, but I'm preparing. Also, next week is DreamHack Summer, and you do like spreadsheets. You go over all the best decks, and control is bad, and aggro is bad. Like, you never had that before. It's like you might think, okay, you're new to Hearthstone. Okay, well, what do I play if there's no aggro and there's no control? And we have like this combo mid-range meta. Like pretty much every deck has like some form of OTK or like huge tempo swings. Yeah. It's like all these decks, none of these decks have a control playstyle anymore, except maybe like Big Spell Mage. But even that is like Jaina is your win condition, and that's like also very unique. It's like a Jaina mm-hmm. deck. Like if you think about the matchup Quest Warrior versus Jaina Control Mage, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter what happens before these two things come down, like Jaina or the Warrior Quest. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I think to your point, a lot of these like control, like model decks, they all have some recruit value. You know, that's where it gets all mixed up and hybridy, because they actually do have all the removal that a control deck has, but the actual big plays don't happen at the end of the game. They happen somewhere in the middle. And it just creates a very difficult classification of a lot of these decks. I still think of them as control, though. Like, it's not pure, but it still resembles that more than, say, you know, a mid-range deck, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, but they're not trying to really... They're going for these broken turns, right? These mana cheat turns,
yep.
And these mid-range turns. So I really don't want to call them control because of it. It's like, or when they just try to flood the board just to complete the quest to win.
Yeah.
They also really don't want to win through control. It's like, there's almost no deck that wants to win through that kind of playstyle anymore. But on the other hand, we always had aggro decks. Always. And now aggro decks are falling off, even Token Druid, because now even Warlock and Quest Warrior are so popular and so dominant that Token Druid has fallen off, that it's really, like, the only two close to viable aggro decks are Even Shaman and Odd Paladin, but they're really also getting countered pretty hard versus like Even Loken.
The counter, though, I feel like has happened very recently, though. Like, it wasn't that long ago that, like, I'm just going to go to here.
But right now.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't going to show that, but here, like, it wasn't that long ago. It was, like, a day or two ago. You know, I'm looking at Legend, and one day ago, like, just this last 24 hours, it was, like, Odd Paladin, Even Shaman, and whatever, right? So, I know those aren't crazy aggro, but I feel like in today's world, they are, I mean, Odd Paladin, I feel like, is close to it. And then even Odd Rogue, for sure, is an aggro-like deck. So... You know, I think just what is considered aggro, it's a similar thing. Like, it's just getting all, like, bunched up now. You know, like, aggro decks aren't just pure face decks. They're, like, a little bit of, you know, value-centric, this kind of weird value mid-range feel to it, too. But I don't know. Is that possible? Is that possible in just card games to evolve the definition of archetypes? I mean, does that ever happen? Does that ever happen? Like, has that ever happened in Magic?
I don't think so. Because it has been a digital card game. Because we have cards like these Death Knights, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't have them in a
real
paper TCG, right? It's how would you? Maybe you can, but it's rather complicated, I guess, to design a card like that.
Yeah, sure.
And like cards, individual cards that are win conditions by themselves, and.
Yeah.
They really changed the pace of the game and every match and how the game is played fundamentally till they rotate out.
Well, that's what I mean. So, like, should we create like new archetype classifications for Hearthstone that, you know, because we've always used the traditional terms and definitions of, you know, control and aggro, mid range, and I mean, then you add like speed, like tempo, and so I'm wondering if we actually need to start creating our own vernacular for Hearthstone, because otherwise we're just like, oh, it's this hybrid thing, or it's not really control because it's not pure control. So what is it? You know, like,
yeah, I think it's great, by the way, but I should really balance it more. Or like when I make these super powerful cards, like when you look at Uther Decay right now, for instance, compared to Gul'dan or Jaina, they have roughly the same mana cost.
Yep.
And so I want to play my Paladin Decay deck, but it's so much weaker. So it's, you really have to, like, I don't know, balance them more. And if they're like remotely balanced, then I think it's great. So not every game goes to fatigue to
have
alternative win conditions.
Yeah, kind of going through, like, this is what I was saying earlier. Look at this. I mean, this is a lot of decks there. And look at this bad boy right here, Murloc Mage, which we were just talking about. This deck I saw like 3 days ago show up, and I'm, or maybe like 5 days ago show up, and I was, I literally had to go and make sure that was right because I'm like, wait, is there something wrong here? So, but Murloc Mage is kind of a bit of a secret right now, given that the popularity of Murloc Mages is like a tenth of what you see like with these top decks. So, have you played against this deck much at all?
I played one game against it today, and I had a deck that is very good at dealing with the board. Mm-hmm. It felt weaker than Temple Mage because mm-hmm. it's just, you know, floods the board. It feels like weaker than Odd Paladin in what it's trying to do, mm-hmm. just flood the board, and or like weaker than Even Shaman. It doesn't have that much refill if you don't draw Alunef. But this kind of proves that you can pretty much play Murlocs in every single class and just have like a pretty good deck.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the Hunter Murloc deck, right, last week, and we did the deck of the week. And, you know, it's funny because I think this deck is just a streamlined version of it. You know, Hunter and Mage are similar in the fact that they typically, you know, don't heal, or they typically are just trying to kill you with this kind of finite amount of damage, right? And, you know, the thing about this deck is, like, it just has to chip you enough to kill you. You know, like, if you can get two fireballs, or if you can even find one with Primordial or you know, Book of Spectres, whatever, you know, like, if you can just find 15 damage, it really just has to chip you 15 damage against, like, half of the other classes to kill them. So, in theory, it makes a lot of sense to be, you know, throwing a Bluegill, too. Like, you get, you know, some charge Murlocs in here, too. And, you know, feels like an aggro deck, you know, a different version of the Mage aggro deck. But to your point, I think the total number of spell damage you get from the Tempo Mage is just so much higher than this one. So you really depend on getting these minions down, which can be inconsistent a lot of times.
I think this is like the most vanilla deck in Hearthstone. Like, you start off with the Innkeeper having like this Tempo version of Mage. Or like whatever you want to call it. And turns out Frostbolt and Firebolt are just always good cards because you can use them as removal and you can use them as a finisher tool. Yeah. And you just play some good mid-range minions and it turns out they're basically still like the classic minions, most of them. It's only like Nightmare Amalgam and General Megasaur added to them, which is crazy. And then like there's only like a few very new cards in this deck.
This is your petition for changing the classic and basic decks, or please. Changing the evergreen decks. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, but yeah, Murloc Mage is doing well. I mean, he's doing better than Tempo Mage right now, and again, it's kind of like a kept secret right now. I've only run into it twice on the ladder. I haven't played it myself, but it was one of the list of things I wanted to get to. To be honest, I'm just addicted to Recruit Warrior right now. I admit it, man. I can't just stop playing that deck. The only time I stop playing Recruit Warrior is when I need to do quests. Like, I played Miracle last night because I had a bunch of rogue quests. But, you know, kind of talking about the decks that we've been playing, you know, you have this priest over here. You know, the Recruit Warrior is the one that's on the right here for me. And the thing I love about the Recruit Warrior right now is that I feel like I can, like, switch out 3 to 4 cards and really try different things against a lot of the different decks that are out there. And I feel like I'm experimenting, but I'm experimenting with a decent chance to win. You know, like there's a difference, right? When you're experimenting, you're just losing every time. There's not much to really, it's hard to learn because your results are just bad, like from a standpoint of win loss. But, you know, when you're actually playing games that end up, you know, either you lose by a very little, you know, it's like literally on the last turn, or you're winning by the skin of your teeth. It feels good being able to kind of swap cards out. And, you know, one of the things I did with this that's different than some of the others is I think Faceless is actually underused right now with all the different type of recruit decks that are out there, especially with this, with Woecleaver. If you Woecleaver, you got plenty of mana to Faceless, you know, and you're getting something crazy good out of it. So that's one of the things I discovered just in terms of doing this. I kind of gather your party. I've just been like having mixed thoughts on, you know, and I wouldn't have had mixed thoughts on unless I, you know, was putting it in and taking it out and trying to figure out like, you know, why it's in there and things like that. So I don't know. It's been a lot of fun. This deck is like super fun. We saw it a little bit in DreamHack Austin. You know, Ike, I think, was playing it. Most people played the Quest Warrior over it. But I actually thought that this deck should have been played a little bit more in the tournament, just because of how good it is against like Token Druid, and you know, just how much awesome late game it has. But yeah, have you ever played? You played much of it this week? I know you played it last week some, right? But I don't know if you played it this week at all.
No, I played Recruit Hunter.
This is like super
flavor
fun,
of the month.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so ridiculously powerful because it's like 90% versus. I actually beat Heist today with Recruit Hunter. That was a funny game. it's broken. It is like, and it's so interesting how the deck actually evolved. I think the new Recruit Hunter evolved the most over the last 2 weeks because you don't play cubes anymore. You're now playing the Ooze, the 6-mana Ooze.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just faster. You copy the death rattle of the Recruit guy that recruits an 8-mana minion from your deck, or Katarina. And it's just so ridiculously powerful.
But is it good in like, Legend, though? Like, our stats don't show it being
very good.
Really? Because our stats show it's better outside of Legend than it is in Legend.
Yes, but maybe because, like, Alexander, it's out to lose to aggro. And if you play any slower deck, it just demolishes it. It's, like, extremely polarized. This is why I hope that aggro decks are coming back, kind of. I really miss aggro decks. I think this is, like, I don't know, the... I like this fight between aggro and control in Hearthstone. I think this is like the fundamental fun in Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Like you play control or you play aggro and both can win and who plays better. And I think it's so great and healthy for the game that you don't always have like these control mirrors. That's like very bad that every game you go to fatigue.
Yeah.
The games are fast, but you play very different, right?
Yeah.
From the controls.
That's a great point. Like we don't see many mirrors these days, right? Like the exact same deck playing against each other.
You know,
it's really cool that way.
And I like these faster games. You can still play control deck and have faster games, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like my recruit warrior games, they're not short, but I would say they're not long, like 20-minute games either. You know, they're probably on average like 10 minutes, 11 minutes, you know, something like that. And it's really cool. You know, it's because like the end of the game, you have packed so much damage at the end. Same with the recruit to hunter. It's kind of the same. Like you're able to have these cards that can just do a ton of damage at the end because of whatever, like rush abusing or it's just, you know, crazy awesome draws from your deck because of, you know, whatever cards you have, like Katrina. But overall, I agree with that. The only ones that are pretty bad are like Quest Priest and Quest, and even Quest Warrior is not horrible these days, but Quest Priest is horrible. Quest Priest literally takes 30 minutes to play sometimes if you play against somebody that really takes the rope most of the turns. All right, yeah, well,
even like Shadowbox Shaman doesn't take so long.
No,
there's so much control.
Yeah, and people know how to play against it, so. You know, they're kind of forced to play it a little earlier than, say, like a month ago. You know, like right now, people are playing it and not necessarily winning on that turn or even the turn after. They win like 3 or 4 turns later, but they're just in such a good position that they can cast Shudderwalk every single turn. So eventually they just end up winning. Yeah, Recruit Hunter. Anyway, to your point, Recruit Hunter is very, very popular right now. Oops, again, I'm showing like all these decks again, but yeah, Recruit Hunter, see like ranked 1 through Legend through 5, it shows up as 50, you know, almost 54%, but for just Legend, it actually just drops significantly. It drops even below. It's like down here. It's like not even 50%. So kind of interesting. I think people are it might have been just an adjustment in the meta. Like it was so good the last few days that
As you can see, like these four decks right there, Odd Paladin, Even Shaman, Token Druid, and Odd Rogue, it loses to all of those.
Yeah, exactly. Makes sense? Stats make sense, right?
Yeah. And even Murloc Mage, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So talk to me about this priest that you've been playing, because, dude, this priest that you're showing right here, the one that you played, this, let me bring it up, this priest is almost identical outside of probably the amalgams that you have, like, which I'm not sure you're gonna have to explain why you have the amalgams, but outside of the amalgams, I built this deck like almost on day one of the expansion. It looked very like almost identical except for 2 or 3 cards. So it sucked really, really bad on the first week of the expansion. So I kind of gave up on it and I didn't really come back to it. So talk to me about this deck. Why is this deck so good, man?
So that's a thing I have on my stream.
Yeah.
That where you can like donate like 500 bits or like sub.
Yeah.
And you can basically force me to play a deck. There's this one person called Hellboy, and every week he comes to my stream and donates a bunch of money and forces me to play Outpriest like for many games. And I keep improving the deck and the list. Like he always started off with some super greedy deck because like so many seven drops
and
nine drops. It's just way too greedy. And then I'm kind of forced in because I have to try to win and to improve the deck. I'm constantly improving it, and this is like the most current version, and it's going great. Like playing an Angel Blade Master and having like an improved hero power and just healing it, it's like the greatest feeling ever.
I mean,
just beat down people. Okay. Like you just curve out and beat down people. But it's actually crazy. You beat like Shadowhawk decks, and first of all, nobody knows the list. They don't even know what to expect, right?
Right,
they see Outpriest, they have no idea what's coming. And the main win condition is Inner Fire. And it's so easy to have any board that sticks, and then you go for the Glitter Moth.
Yep.
You can't remove anything. It's out of volcano range, whatever, and you suddenly go for Inner Fire and just kill him. It's kind of crazy that it works.
I had that all in my head on day one, dude, but it never came together for me. Maybe just the meta is a much better place now that this can work.
Yeah, because it's slower.
Yeah.
It's always important to have not a fatigue plan, but a kill plan. This is probably why it works. You don't try fatigue or anything.
Oh, like no. I mean, I was running Inner Fire Divine Spirit too, like trying to win that way. So this doesn't have Divine Spirit in it. So it's a little bit different that way.
Yeah, and you need to play the Umgallum for the dragon count. Because you can't play the 6 mana dragon.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like
okay.
This, and you can play the 5.
Yeah,
you could play the 5 mana dragons, but they're not that great. The scale banes.
Yeah,
like the this quartz elemental, whatever it's called. It's
quartz
the 5
elemental.
Mana guy.
Yep, 5/8 or whatever.
It's pretty powerful. It's such a cool deck because there's so many cards that you don't play in any deck.
Yeah.
And you play them all in this deck. The card that I added today is the Fungal that heals every minion by 3. It's so insane.
Fungal and Enchanter? Fungal Enchanter. Yeah.
It's my favorite
I've never played. That's another card
I haven't
played
yet. It's also my favorite card. It's so great with the 7 mana Drake. And it's so awesome. I just love this card.
Yeah.
Like, especially, they have to leave your minions up at some point because they have too much HP, and then you trade and then play Cleric and just throw a bunch of cards.
Sounds great, man. And for those of you listening that might, you know, listen to us on our podcast each week, we're talking Inner Fires and Cleric. Again, it's an odd priest. So you've got Clerics, Power Wars Shields, Fungal Enchanters, Injured Blade Masters, Amalgams, Shadow Ward Deaths, Stonehill Defenders, Creepers, Acolytes, Moths, the Quartz Elemental, the Nightscale Matriarch, finally getting some love, and then Psychic Scream, Wormguard, Alexstrasza, Baku, and Ysera. You know, I still think that Quartz Elemental in this type of deck is underrated. Like, I think that card could still bust people super hard in a combo, you know, like in the Inner Fire or Divine Spirit Inner Fire type of deck, but I just still haven't been able to see it implemented right. This is a start, though. Like, is the Night Scale Matriarch, does that actually spawn anything for you? Do you actually get a lot of whelps out of that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Because people run out of removal.
Yeah.
They just can't kill it.
Yeah.
Or, like, you hide it, you play a Wormguard first, and then you play that, and then something will always survive. Yeah, for sure.
Gosh, yeah. It's one of my most disappointing cards, because I really had high hopes for it, and I still hasn't worked out. But I haven't tried it again. It's been weeks since I've tried it. Yeah, I might have to do this.
The greatest feeling is definitely Injured Blade Master plus Hero.
Yeah.
Nothing's better than that.
Yeah, well, Hellboy, thanks for getting Gar to do that. And we might just do this for Deck of the Week, too. We pretty much just do something from... I was either going to do Recruit Warrior or that, but this looks a little bit more fun, and it's a way to force me to play the deck, too. It's definitely good stuff. Okay, well, it's kind of like what we've been doing this week, just, and again, playing a bunch of awesome, cool decks. We've got a lot, some news in the community where they announced the newest event. It's the Tavern of Time event. I believe it's of time, right? Like, I don't, Yeah, Tavern of Time, and it's a special event. Let me bring up the actual blog post so we can take a look at it. And, you know, obviously Toki is a big part of this. It's going to be June 11th through the July 2nd. They're offering the bundle pack, you know, like the 10-pack bundle thing again, which is awesome. You get actually two of the classic and all the expansions in this current year. And so it's a really good deal. Go if you can go and buy that, you're going to definitely get something great out of that. And then on June 13th, you log in, you get a free gold pack, golden classic pack, which is pretty awesome. What were you saying?
I think you can buy the bundle as many times as you want as well.
Oh, is it? I didn't actually realize you could buy as many as... Oh, and any number of times. Wow, I actually didn't realize that. That's awesome. And if it's... I mean, it's a decent price, too, but it's cool, especially when you're starting off and you're getting back in the Hearthstone, you're trying to figure out which expansion to build. You know, obviously getting a bundle like this is really, really nice. You can break it down into smaller increments. Along with this special event, you know, came an update 11.2, and boy, like, I don't know if they expected this update to actually be, you know, a major one. You know, I could see, like, and Blizzard's like, hey guys, yeah, it's time to get an update out with, like, a lot of this you know, housekeeping stuff that we've been, you know, really queuing up for a while now, so let's just get a bunch of these small ones out there, you know, in a small update or whatnot. I mean, it was 11.2, so clearly it was, you know, viewed as a pretty decent update. You know, there was definitely some arena updates too, and but the biggest thing that happened, at least in terms of the community, is that Tess Greymane got a change, and it was worded that Tess Greymane had a bug fix, you know, or at least it was listed under bug fixes, which, boy, I think that was like the error of a lifetime, or at least error of the week for Blizzard here, because the community just raged over that and has been their pitchforks and everything out, because the way Tess Greymane changed is that it got like a very Yogg like change or nerf. It's actually a nerf to the deck, where limited to 30 effects being, you know, that occur. Tess Greymane, you know, casts like all the battle cries, right, for any of the non-class cards, right, that you actually get. A lot of people play fun, casual players especially love that the deck because it has that Yogg feel to it. Now it has the same thing with Yogg, where if it gets like silenced or if it gets transformed or whatnot, or like Tess does, it gets stopped completely. And a lot of people were very upset about that, partially because Blizzard, you know, in some interviews said that they wanted it to be like that, and they weren't going to change it, you know, when they released it. I think that you know, folks just don't think it's been a problem, you know, like, and not a lot of people have complained about Tess Greymane. In fact, I'll attest that I've never heard anybody complain about Tess Greymane, because she's not being played in the higher levels, right? It's mostly in the fun area that it's being played. It's being played a decent amount, though. It's not like it's not played at all. So, yeah. I mean, what's your reaction? Clearly, the community has spoken, and they're very, very upset about it. And I mean, I can even show you just like Reddit right now. Reddit is... It's amazing. Like the thread yesterday got like 20,000 upvotes. Like,
you should.
Wow.
You should look at all the threads, because this. It's not just one thread.
Yeah, it's like half the threads. Tess. Yeah, that the yeah. Tess Greymane.
Like, I want to quit Hearthstone and yeah.
So it's your reactions to this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the biggest topics in Hearthstone of this year, if not the biggest. It is actually a bigger topic than Ben Broad leaving the development team.
That's crazy, yeah.
It actually is. God. It's the biggest topic of the year. More important than the World Championships or anything like that. So
yeah, Global Games is announced somewhere in here too, and it's got barely any upvotes. Nobody gives a crap about Global Games compared to Tess Greymane.
But the comments are so ridiculous. If you look at the comments, like, people saying they're gonna quit Hearthstone because of this, and Blizzard ruining the game, and the number one outcry is that people complain about, at least because it's a clear nerf to Tess, that they want to get a dust refund on the card.
That's right.
And that's reasonable. And Blizzard has already replied. And it's funny that instead of giving people the dust refund, they plan on changing the card back. I don't know. That's actually kind of funny to think about.
Well, to be honest, it wouldn't be such a bad thing. I mean, unless their stats show something that's egregiously bad about the card, why not? You know, like, at least you're responding to the community and you know, like, I don't think it's not in competitive. I don't see it being in competitive anytime soon. I would not blame them for doing so. If they don't change it, right, at least say why you changed it. Like, they didn't really talk about why they changed it.
Apparently also this patch caused so many new bugs. I'm going to talk about this in a sec. And what showed with this thread, I became a believer that every single Hearthstone player in the world is playing a test deck right now. Because it's such a big deal, apparently. But I think Blizzard should have learned from things like the Naga change, how big of an outcry that was, that these quote-unquote small changes will not go unnoticed, for sure.
Yeah, to the community's, defense, the bug fix terminology or term there should not have been used. I mean, it is an actual nerf. Even if it was like a balance change, I don't think we would see as much of the community being so vicious right now about it. And also, I think that I don't know why they viewed it as a bug fix. Like, maybe it actually is some kind of bug that made it end up going into a very Yogg-Saron thing.
These cards, Yogg-Saron, Tess.
Yeah.
There's like two more to be in line. Shadowwalk.
Yeah, but that's not a bug fix, though. You know, like, I'm trying to see if there maybe under the covers there really was a bug that internally it was a bug fix, but externally it's a nerf, to all of us. Because if it was a nerf, I'm almost sure the protocol is to evaluate whether it deserves like a dust refund or not. Like, that's just normal. Like, anytime they do a dust refund, I'm almost sure the team gets together or anytime they make a nerf, the team gets together and probably says, hey, do we do a dust refund on this? I feel like this didn't go through that process at all. And, I'm not sure what happened there, but, I guess in your opinion, Guard, do you think people do deserve a dust refund for this, given how it's changed?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Listen, look at the mob. There's like the entire Hearthstone community coming together.
Yeah.
Give them the dust. Crazy. I would give them four. I would give them double the dust.
Yeah, after all this.
Take the dust. It's like throw a bunch of dust into a mosh pit.
Oh, man.
Fight for it. Take it. Absolutely. Look at this.
It's crazy. Look at this.
Reddit, not just of Hearthstone subreddit.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest topics in the world.
And your statement about every player plays test, no, that is a that is an absolute no that people don't. But people like to complain too. So when the pitchforks are out, the pitchforks come out of nowhere too and decide to really jump on that. But that's too bad. They did make a mistake. Hopefully they at least correct, go back and really say that they made a mistake in terms of how they labeled it. Whether they change it back, I'd like to see it change back too. I don't see it as a problem right now. If they need to change it later and there's a very good reason for changing it later, then the community will not revolt like they are right now. They'll understand as long as there's reasoning behind it. But we've seen, whether, like you said, with Naga or it's Arena or whatever, if you don't actually provide a very rational or reason that the community can understand, man, the community will get you on it. Guaranteed they will get you on it. So
I want to mention that this bug fix caused way, way more bugs in
there,
the game now.
Yeah, there was.
Like this stuff, I don't know if some of this stuff is intentional or not, because now you can, for instance, interrupt the elemental chain. I don't know if you know it. If you play an elemental,
mm-hmm.
If you play an elemental and then you polymorph it, then it cancels the chain for your opponent. So
So it creates the prerequisite for the next turn, you mean? It actually cancels that?
Yeah, it's super weird.
Wow.
But apparently if you polymorph your own elemental, it doesn't cancel your chain. So it's super weird. And Stansivka actually posted today a clip where he plays Shadowbox Shaman and he plays three Serenite Chain Gang.
Yeah, I saw that.
And the Shadowbox afterwards only casted one Serenite Chain Gang. So apparently if you silence a Chain Gang, it cancels or bugs out the Shadowbox animations. And there's like a bunch of bugs like that with all sorts of different effects.
Well, it sounds like if you transform, it's like almost as if it didn't exist. You know, like the state of it, right? Whatever the state engine is or what the state queue is, they completely change it. So that's clearly a bug. I'm sure they'll fix that. I mean, that's not a big issue, but
Not announcing it and then they change. There's a lot of these changes they don't announce. Like
they shouldn't do that. I don't know why they do that. There's no reason.
They changed Jade Spirit to an elemental. It's such a big deal. It was actually completely unannounced in the patch.
That was a while ago. It still blows
my mind.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're getting better. They're getting better about it, but they should just be overly cautious about it because people will catch them. You know what I mean? Like, people will catch them if they're making a mistake too. So they should know that by now. It's been proven many, many times that the community, we have so many people looking at the game. There's going to be somebody that catches, you know, anything. Okay. Well, anyways, that's, the event. You know, again, try to get your free packs and all that stuff whenever it comes out. See anything else that's going on with the event? No, I think that's about it. Oh, the big thing is the arena changes. Oh my gosh, yeah. The arena cards.
Yeah, the arena changes. Yeah, yeah. The bundles.
Yeah, that's huge. We're probably going to have an arena episode next week, by the way, guys. But we can talk about like actually how these cards are performing. But we can actually take a look at least right now with some of these cards. Man, these cards... Some of these cards are crazy. Like every one of these cards has great value. Just first off, they're all just good cards to get. And you know, some of these have very interesting designs to them too. Like I feel like they're experimenting with, you know, in Arena as a way to maybe, you know, release these in Standard sometime. But have you gotten a good look at these cards, Gara? Like some of the effects, like Stasis Elemental, freeze a minion until that elemental dies. Oh my god, that's awesome. That could be so good. There's all kinds of like amazing type of effects for just the class cards and the common cards too, which I think could be an issue in Arena, given that the, you know, common cards and how they're offered in the different buckets. But any of these effects really stand out to you? Because there are what, 28 in total? I'm just showing the first batch of them right now. Yeah. Somebody said Chrono Shot is amazing. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I've been taking a good look at all of them. Yeah, it's like the auto cast, I think, is super broken. When you draw it, that it just, you know, gets casted. And then, because we all know how powerful tempo is in Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Like, and these, every single card is so powerful. And then, yeah, you saw it also like in the dungeon runs, like mm-hmm. these out passive effects, which basically that is. And how long does this event last?
It lasts a month.
Like where you, mm-hmm. it's a month. Wow, that's crazy.
It's like 3 to 4 weeks. Yeah, yeah. I think so some of the arena. I was talking to Duakta last night, and yeah, he's kind of holding his breath. It's gonna be like the first week, and then we'll see. We might actually have him on next week to talk a little bit about it. But I mean, seeing these cards it's pretty exciting to see these cards. You know, like it. Actually, this is the same one, right? I need to get the other one.
Yeah. Weapons are cool. What is 6 mana 10/10 dragon?
Yeah. So, yeah, these are
6 mana 10/10
meme. Isn't it crazy? Actually, are there 20? Maybe I'm thinking that there's two sets. Is there just one set? I forget. Is there 14 cards or 28 cards? Jeez. I need to make sure. I might have like double copied them on accident there. There might be only just 14 cards here. You know, even just these 14 cards, it's pretty nuts, man. There's that one with a weapon. There's the weapon there too. And you know, like with the new buckets or whatnot, weapons are going to be very common. It's kind of weird, this weapon. It's basically, when you kill a minion, it destroys all copies of this weapon, which is like, okay. Or it destroys all copies of the minion. So, like, if you...
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. If you had a bunch of wisps, it just kills all the wisps. That's pretty cool, man. But it's very, very specific, though, to a certain deck. I don't know how good that would be in Arena. But, you know,
like,
just...
When I look at these cards and, like, from dungeon runs or, like, these Arena cards that we get from time to time, mm-hmm. these special ones, there's so many cool cards, right, they can create or they're clearly able to do that... Sometimes it feels weird that for Constructed, for example, this past expansion with Witwoud, that we kind of get like a relatively boring set of cards in comparison, mm-hmm. because they clearly know how to do very cool effects. And
yeah.
It's not about like them being so broken, just cool effects.
Yeah, but and cool effects are hard to balance, too. I mean, it's... Don't you think? It's hard.
Maybe. But they don't have to be good, you know? Just cool effects.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty sure kind of like Tess, you know? Remember Tess game?
But Tess is great. It's clearly it's been cool played card. By everybody. We're going to see
now
that
ACT. Think about it, it's probably Korea, the coolest card in the set.
Tess?
In terms of effect. Yeah, in Midwood. What's cool?
That's true.
That?
I mean, in this... Oh, you mean in this set? Oh,
yes.
That's a good question.
So maybe that's why.
Which one? What would I pick as the coolest card in this set? There's got to be something cool in this set. It's got to be like Azalina or, you know, one of those. King... Oh, not King Tog. Mm-hmm.
This is so much cooler.
Okay. I don't know. You can make an argument it is one of the best. Definitely one of the best. All right, well, anyways, Arena players, you know, get ready, because in 5 days, you're going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be definitely a lot of fun. I think I'm going to try out, I think the Hunter card is really good. The Crow, it's basically a freezing shot on whatever you want. And I think the Shaman one's pretty cool, too, so I'm probably going to try both of those right off the bat, and God, can you imagine Arena, where your 4-drop can just freeze one minion? I mean, you got, like, permanent, you got awesome tempo. That could be like a 2 or 3 turn tempo advantage on that one play. That's crazy, man. Like, but exciting. Good to see that they're doing more with Arena, even if some people think it's kind of too crazy. See, on top of that, Arena changes too. Actually, speaking of Arena changes, I think since the last time we were on here, right? Yeah, I think literally the day after the show, they announced the Arena and how they're doing the different buckets. We're going to get into a lot more next week, so I might just hold off on this. But they did create a different bucket system, or they revised, you know, maybe their previous bucket system, and then they were much more transparent about how it all works and just how, like, you know, the choices will be determined, you know, and how, like, the cards are kind of clumped together and bucketed. So I think it was great. I think it's just more transparency there. And then again, like, we'll go into more details once we have a more Arena centric episode next week. HCT teams were announced. So unfortunately, I didn't see you on there, dude, which is kind of like a bummer, but we do get a good look at just all the guys, just all the players that are actually on teams. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that are familiar names on teams that you know, and some familiar names on teams that you don't know. You know, like, this is an opportunity for some of these teams to make a name for themselves. We got, like, Celestial Wolves actually has 2 teams, which is pretty interesting. But, you know, I guess any teams you think, you know, really stand out to you? Obviously, F2K is on top right now with the rankings. But who do you think is a sleeper in this, on all this? Like, in terms of a team that's like, not very big brand, but it's got, like, killer players on it.
Team Genji?
Team Genji?
Oh, yeah. Both of them.
Where's Team Genji? It's the T's, right? Team Genji, where are you? Teeth. There we go. Oh God, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see that. Sentinel, Rossi, Viper, TNC. Yeah, exactly.
And like, what is Team Genji? Like, who is this?
This reminds me of like Overwatch contenders, where you can just make up whatever the heck your name you want, and just like, yeah, let's do it, let's go. Yeah, so Team Genji, I'm guessing, is some type of Hearthstone Overwatch type of organization. And yeah, those are pretty good players that they picked up.
Yeah.
So anyways, all the teams are here. You can kind of get a look at, you know, when you're actually seeing the actual rankings, you know, these are basically all the teams that that are in play there in terms of the team competition for HCT. Okay, well, I think that's all we have for news, guys. I want to remind you guys that we are sponsored by Dollar Shave Club today. And those of you that might not be familiar with Dollar Shave Club, you know, you can obviously go to dollarshaveclub.com and check out all their cool products. They sell products best known for, obviously, their shaving kits that they offer up. You can get a daily essential starter set right now for $5. And if you use the Value Town, you know, the dollarshaveclub.com/valuetown, you know, you can get that starter kit for $5, I believe it is. Yeah, I believe it's $5. And the cool thing about Dollar Shave Club is that it's kind of expanded, you know, into any kind of essentials that you need in the bathroom. Like anything that you use that you need, you know, whether it's like shower gels or, you know, shampoos, conditioners, you know, everything, hair gels, toothpaste, they sell it all now at Dollar Shave Club. So it's kind of a one-stop shop for you or anything in your bathroom. So definitely go check it out. You can still, of course, get, you know, just any kind of, you know, shaving essentials you need. They've got those awesome, one wipe Charlie's that Gara, I think you mentioned it was one of your favorites last time we plugged Dollar Shave. Why don't you explain them what those one wipe Charlie's are, man?
The one wipe,
the little wipes. Wipe. Yeah, the little, you know.
I was like a big fan of the shave butter.
Oh,
like,
I thought it was the wipes. Of, okay, maybe not. Maybe it was.
It became a staple of my shaving routine, I gotta say. It makes my beard nice and soft, and it smells really nice.
Yeah.
And I just really like it. And yeah, I was always looking for a product like that, just to make it like more soft, because I always shaved my beard completely, because it's kind of like hard. I don't know what the English word is for it just being like
coarse, kind of like
sharp.
Yeah,
kind of. Mm-hmm. And if it's nice and soft, I like to keep it like on like a 3 millimeter length. Mm-hmm. You still have to shave it like almost daily, but yeah, it's nice. It's awesome. I really like it. It's my favorite
product. Yeah, he's kind of talking about the shave butter. It's definitely like this really thick and really, it feels different. Definitely, I don't know if it feels like butter, because I don't put butter all over my face ever.
Shaving cream, where you just have it like the full face.
Yeah, it's really, really thick. It's really cool. But yeah, so go and check it out, guys. You can actually try it out right now. Again, go to dollarshaveclub.com/valuetown, and you can sign up for that starter kit that comes with a razor, 6 blades, I believe, and the shave butter, one set of the one wipe Charlie's, and I think some body cleanser too. Yeah, body cleanser too. So yeah, give it a try, and obviously thank them, support them for, you know, sponsoring the show too, if you enjoy Value Town, of course. All right, next up we've got DreamHack Austin. So big event that happened this past weekend that a lot of the more notable names in our competitive scene were at, in. It was nice because we actually got a chance to see big names compete against each other regularly for all the broadcasted matches. So, you know, if you follow the scene, you definitely, you know, like, they were the bigger names. Even if you don't follow the scene, I think you probably would have seen one name that you recognize in almost every one of the marquee matchups that they showed. DreamHack Austin also was last hero standing, so it wasn't Conquest, a little bit different. And we saw a different meta too because of it. Not surprising, but it was actually nice to be able to see, you know, just different strategies in play there. Anything stand out to you, just like right off the bat? And congrats, obviously, to Amnesiac for winning. He ended up being Zalae in a pretty awesome matchup at the end of a tournament. But yeah, any highlights, standouts to you in terms of the event?
What I'd like to see is the reflection of top players in a top 8, how it reflects the meta. Like, is it good for pro players or is it bad? And we see a lot of the top players or the best players from the tournament ending up in the top 8, ending up in the finals. Mm-hmm. Arguably, the two best players of the tournament ended up in the finals, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. It was Amnesiac versus Zalay. Zalay, one of the most respected players, one of the best players. I would rate Zalay as top 3 players mechanically in the world right now, and seeing him in the finals against Amnesia, you know, everyone knows Amnesiac is very, very good, I think, for the competitive scene. You like to see consistency. And we have seen a very great finals as well, a lot of skill. I think the most standout game was the Token Druid Mirror Match,
yep.
which was the very first game,
the very
which
first game
lasted
in the finals.
Like forever. I think like almost 2 hours. It was like ridiculous. And yep. it was yep. funny listening to Admirable and Dr. J having absolutely no clue what is going on because they don't know the matchup at all. They were just
nobody knows the matchup. I think Amnesiac even said he only played it once. So they were both learning it at the same time. That's what was really cool about it.
And with that said as well, it's crazy to think about how high the potential is of Hearthstone if you can end up in the finals and you don't even know the matchups. You played a matchup once or twice. That is possible is mind-blowing.
Well, we've seen that matchup. We've seen Token Druid versus Token Druid before. I mean, we surprisingly haven't seen it very much, you know, just in HCT because usually it's banned or something's disappeared. But we just haven't seen it go to that extent, you know, like actually go into a fatigue, you know, drawn out type of, you know, matchup where they both had like UIs in their decks and it was almost a mirror. Like they both were almost in identical situations. You know, Zalay actually had, I think, double Savage where Amnesiac didn't. I think it was that way.
Right? Amnesiac had.
It was the other way. Actually, it was the other way around, right? Like
no, like both had both Savage Raws, but Amnesiac ended up using his first Savage Raw right. early to burn a card, and Zalay intentionally
that's right.
burned every
card.
Draw
yeah.
just to not use any card from his hand. And he basically masterfully outplayed Amnesiac
yeah.
in that game. And it was really crazy to see how far Zalay was actually thinking ahead. Everything planned out perfectly. Just an amazing match.
Yeah.
So people that haven't watched it should definitely check it out.
Yeah, Zalay, you know, I wouldn't say Zalay like didn't make mistakes. I mean, he definitely made some mistakes throughout the week. But like his ability to recover from mistakes is amazing. I mean, it just really shows the level of player he is. And I'll give you an example. There was one, I forgot who he was playing, but there was one match he had his priest, right, which relies on Inner Fire. He only has like one Inner Fire in his deck, one Divine Spirit too, I believe, but definitely one Inner Fire. He burns his Inner Fire like on turn 10 or something like really early. He burns his Inner Fire. And, you know, most people would just like quit at that point. I mean, literally just like concede or whatnot. And Zalay somehow still ends up winning that matchup, you know, by playing more of a, you know, kind of tempo and pressure oriented type of strategy, which, you know, typically wouldn't play that deck in that fashion. He ended up kind of switching and being able to adapt that way. And he still ended up winning, you know, just playing basically perfect the rest of the way. So, yeah, I mean, definitely kudos for him. He seemed just more deliberate, like in terms of, you know, he took his time, like every single play. I mean, he was like the life coach of the tournament, like literally using the rope pretty much the entire time. And he played phenomenally. I thought he was going to win. And especially because, you know, Amnesiac hadn't been playing quite as much, right? Like as Zalay has. And Amnesiac even in his interview said that he had been taking some time for himself, you know, just to whatever, you know, that actually is, but it sounds like it was time away from Hearthstone. And then it wasn't until, you know, maybe just shortly before the tournament, he kind of got back on the practicing grind. So I thought for sure going into that matchup, Zalay would win, but man, yeah, Amnesiac ended up playing well. The Miracle Rogue seemed to perform super well in that format, the last Hero Standing. I don't know if you noticed that or not. I wish I had an old Guardian type of article in front of me, but I mean, I saw a series just won by a lot of, like, a number of series just won by the Miracle Rogue in later rounds of the tournament. So thoughts on Miracle Rogue right now? And I mean, was it just that the players were just playing the deck phenomenally, or is it just really, really good in this type of Last Hero Standing format?
It's just very, very good. It's the best counter deck to both Warlock versions, mm-hmm. and which is even Lock and Q-Block. And Q-Block was actually the highest win rate deck in the tournament overall. It was the best performing deck. The second best was even Warlock. Mm-hmm. And Rogue automatically did good because it countered that. It was also countering Tauntruid, and it was also countering Quest. Quest Warrior. So it was just a very powerful meta pick, and I think it's by far the best fourth class, right after Warlock, Druid, and Warrior. Mm-hmm. So that, by the way, for people that want to play a tournament, that's like a very great lineup to have: Warlock, Rogue, Quest Warrior, and Druid. It's just the best four classes in the game right now, and Rogue just lines up perfectly when people play less aggro. Obviously, against aggressive decks, it's not that great. But besides Token Druid, this is what I meant in a tournament meta right now. Aggro decks and control, like full control decks, are just not good. There's just, no decks that are too viable. Like, there's occasionally even Shaman and Odd Paladin. But in a tournament setting, almost nobody brings Odd Paladin just because it gets countered by all the other top three classes. So it doesn't make too much sense. So I think Miracle Rogue is just fantastic. And it's interesting to see that deck. Like, it gets so little from expansion to expansion, the archetype, and it's still always like coming back so strong.
I mean, the base cards, it's just, as long as you have Auctioneer and you have zero mana cards, you're good. Like, you can replace like a few things, like swap out a, what's been in it in the past? I'm like drawing blanks now. Swap out a 3/5, and put in a thug now, or it's all the mid game. It's all the mid game that ends up changing in the Miracle Rogue, but the early game removal and the late game is pretty much the same, for the most part. Fildori is obviously another add to it too, which is great for tempo. And But Miracle Rogue was like, nobody I felt like had lineups to ban Miracle Rogue. They pretty much just let Miracle Rogue go, and it performed super, super well because of it. I loved seeing the Warrior though. Like, the Warrior counters Token Druid so hard. Like, that's why I was actually a little surprised that people brought Token Druid, even though it's such a powerful deck that can win out of nowhere. But I knew that a lot of people would just counter that outright. And it's easy to counter Token Druid if you're trying to counter Token Druid.
So, but if you don't counter it, you get destroyed by it, on the other hand.
Of course, but I don't know. I just, like,
but
like,
we still had two Token Druids in the finals.
I know. That's what
they did
crazy.
Their job.
Yeah. It was basically a game of, like, when do I play the Token Druid, right? And it's like, okay, let's let the Warrior win now so I can use the Token Druid later and just kind of win out, right? So actually, no, that's not how it works, right? Because that's Conquest. So you'd have to beat the Warrior first, and then you can just, like, run out with the Token Druid. So interesting strategies like there for sure. And one question I have for you, Gara, is whose idea was to do this? Okay. Whose idea was to give Amnesiac flowers at the end of this thing?
God's idea. Look at him.
What a boss. Like, the Karate Kid. Oh my gosh. Cobra Kai right now.
And he was so happy as well. That's like the best.
Yeah, he was, man. No salt there from the young savage.
So random.
Yeah. So, and they're nice flowers too. I don't know if you know much about flowers.
Yeah.
Those are nice flowers. So, giving it
like
to the music, I was
such
laughing.
Flowers at a wedding, you're the happiest wife ever.
Yeah.
Look at them.
Oh, beautiful. Man, it was fun.
And he's so happy.
No, it was good. It's good seeing him. And he's on a roll, man. Like, he won at PAX East too, right? So, I think Amnesiac is having a really great year already, and we're not even halfway through it quite yet. I don't think he went to Seoul, though. Did he go to Seoul? I don't think he did, because I was, like, talking to him about maybe popping on here and talking to us today. So I don't know if he's going to be there this week. But a lot of the players that were at Austin, I think, are headed out there.
He doesn't have to win more. His job is done.
I know, right? He's got no points. I'm done. Yeah, just totally done. Okay, well, the one thing I think I'll say about Dream Mountain Gossen, it's like pretty hard to, it wouldn't be right for me just to completely ignore it, is that, man, they had so many streaming issues. Like, the production was really not great. Like, and, I mean, the casting was fine. I mean, a lot of people, I don't know, I enjoy just, like, Lorinda and some of his craziness and just that type, Cora, of course, and Noxious couldn't make it last minute, so Dr. J did a great job just filling in last minute, you know, and of course, Admirable. I kind of like that whole dynamic. It was kind of fun. But there was a lot of lag that was going. Casting was fine. But they need to fix that because it was going on for a long time. It was almost the entire first day, I think it was happening. And I think it affected the viewership too. I was talking to you about this right during the event. I was like, why is there like, you know, I think it was the production issue that's holding back the viewership of this tournament. This tournament should have got over 30,000 people watching it. And I think that it didn't quite get to 30,000, you know, it was probably like in the 20s, but this is the one tournament where I'd say we've had the most high profile people playing each other. So it would be a very high end representation of even just what competitive Hearthstone, you know, might look like, you know, just in something that's not like the world championships, you know? So I was a little disappointed just in terms of the viewership, but it had a lot to do with just that part of it. But overall, you know, I think that, you know, no drama from, you know, how the event was run. You know, I think everybody seemed to be fine with it, with, you know, no controversy with the Swiss rounds or anything like that. I didn't hear about anything. So that's usually a good thing. HTT Seoul's happening this weekend. Anything that you anticipate? You anticipate seeing anything different than what we've seen at a lot of the HTT stops in terms of strategy and, like, is best decks going to basically win again? Like, it seems to be doing the best in terms of strategy these days.
One thing that is definitely different is a lot more drama. When you look at Twitter about Seoul, oh my God, so much drama.
What's going on? I don't understand.
Apparently, they have the absolute worst possible schedule. They're trying to do 7 rounds of Swiss in one day. So they plan on having every Swiss round last 1 hour at max, and it still goes to midnight in their schedule. So they will basically play till 5 a.m. in the morning, and the next day they should start at 10 a.m. So basically almost no sleep in between. I don't know how they're going to do that, but if you look at the schedule, it's not going to work. If
that's
you have ever
brutal,
been to an
HCT
2 stop, and there's apparently like a very common problem is that there's absolutely no communication between like Blizzard and the HCT 2 stop organizers, or like in between.
For any of them, or you mean just for Seoul? Like,
in general,
really,
like, there's common issues because there's no player feedback at all. A lot of pro players have requested that because they go to these events and they see what is good and what is bad,
yeah,
and they would like to give their feedback, but they can't because nobody asks. And so, we have these repeating issues from two stop to two stop. If you ever go to an HCT two stop, you will never be able to do 7 rounds of Swiss.
Yeah, 7 rounds of Swiss is brutal. I mean, we just saw how long the matches took this past weekend. You know, if people like Soleil are playing and roping, oh my God, no way. Like, you're going to be like 75, 80 minute round, you know, like rounds at least.
Can you imagine 500 people finishing in 1 hour? Yeah. That's like, no way.
Yeah.
Zero chance.
Yeah, that would be pretty brutal. Well, we'll see what happens. It's a test of, you know, endurance, and sometimes these stops, that's what it could be about too. We don't talk about that at all. You know, maybe part of the allure and part of the marketing is how difficult it is to play at these tournaments too. It's like, can you imagine if you're like one of those events that's just like, yeah, part of it is just like, we make it really hard. We turn off the AC too and make you sweat and like make it super hard to play Hearthstone. Yeah, that would be pretty interesting if anybody tried that. I'm not sure if Blizzard would allow you to continue doing it.
I think a lot of these players are also going to burn out. Like, for example, Mazi is not going to be home in like 2 months or so.
Yeah.
Or 3 months even. It's like, you can't play in HCT every single weekend. That's pretty much what a lot of these players are doing. And next week, there's DreamHack Summer right after Seoul. And before that was Austin, and before that was tours. I think we have maybe too many tournaments back
there. I mean, it's a tour. I mean, I think that they've created the option of which where you can go to the tournaments and make your points there, or you can stay home, you know, and play ladder and do that sort of thing. So sure. I don't know. I don't mind that. I don't mind people traveling for months at a time. That's what a lot of other, you know, scenes and sports are like. So I don't mind so much that, as long as they don't have to do both, as long as they don't have to like ladder and have to like play these tournaments to qualify, you know, for prelims and, you know, the playoffs. So it's that I'm okay with that. Is my point.
I don't think the meta can change too much from one week to another, because these people are spending half the time of the week just traveling and playing the tournament. So how do you create a new meta? It just takes time in Hearthstone.
Yeah.
Else you just end up playing decks from a different player. And do you really feel comfortable with all the matchups? But yeah. People definitely learn from playing these tournaments which decks weren't performing and change a bit. But I don't expect too drastic changes. I don't see Merc Mage in the finals.
Yeah. Well, to your point, I don't see people that are traveling all the time being able to innovate either. You know, I think they know that. I think they will stick to it. Or maybe they have teammates at home that are innovating and, you know, theorizing, coming up with lineups, practicing them, and then they just feed them the decks, right, as they go. We've definitely seen, like, Tyler and some others who literally were fed a deck that they never even played, but they just kind of trusted the group of people or the person that suggested it, that it was actually good, you know, for whatever strategy that they're going for. We might see, you know, a little bit more of that now, so.
I think these teams or groups will come out on top, because they will have just the overall best strategy and organization with a group of people, you know, working for them or together with them.
Yeah, yeah. But that should be happening. It's probably going to be some weird hours, given that it's, you know, in Korea, of course. But try to catch that if you can on Twitch, of course. I think it's on Twitch. I think it's going to be broadcasted on Twitch. I'll have to double check that. But that's probably it for the events this week. Want to give a quick shout out, obviously, to our patrons that we do each and every week. These are the folks that support us and, you know, really have always been the foundation of us being able to do this show and continue to be that foundation. Some of these folks are Mike T, our legendary producer, of course, Raydan, Bob K, Bryce L, Christopher D, Michael O, Graham S, Two Comma Kid, Cameron M, Jeff B, Eric F, Gary D, Alex G, and Anti-Crisis. Thanks so much, guys, for supporting. If you want to support the show, you enjoy the show, go to patreon.com/valuetown. We've been there for, you know, over a couple of years now, and you know, they're definitely a great service and trustworthy, so you don't have to worry about that. And you can go there, just make a pledge for, you know, however much you want to support. And anything helps. Any little bit helps. Don't think that, yeah, you don't think like a dollar will help or whatnot. It actually does help, you know, over time. So, yeah, just check that out. We do some Deck of the Week shows every Monday where we have the patrons come and be like a guest on a show that I do for about 30 minutes. And we always post a Deck of the Week on the Patreon that's open to everybody. And we play that deck. This week will probably be that Priest deck that Gar was talking about earlier, and then we talk about it just together, really talk about the cool plays and the win percentages that we got just on our own, and you just kind of have a good time that way. But you can participate in that if you just go and check it out there. All right, we got some questions from Q&A. We've got Penny Packer has a question. Hey, Chanman, I had a question for Value Town. Can you guys discuss Conquest tournament lineup strategies a little bit and what best lineups are right now? What to target, what to ban, just bring the best deck, etc. Kind of touched on a little bit a second ago, but get into details with that, Gara. Like, what strategy do you think is working the best now?
I talked at tours with like a bunch of pro players about how weird it is Conquest compared to LHS right now, because it feels like you can play the exact same lineup in both formats and that it's not too different. Which is basically bringing the best decks. Mm-hmm. Right now, the best decks are decks like Even Warlock, Cube, Cube Lock, Token Druid, Taunt Druid, Quest Warrior, and then a version of Rogue, most of the time Miracle Rogue. And you just play those decks. You can use them in LHS and in Conquest. And there's not too much difference between it, besides that in LHS, you can get swept by a deck. So it's way more volatile, I would say. And I think pro players prefer Conquest right now, just because, you know, if there's like this OP deck in Conquest, at least you lose only one game against it. Let's say the two problematic classes are Druid and Warlock, and in Conquest you can ban one, and in you just lose to the other one game. And in LHS you can get swept by it, because mm-hmm. there's not much that you can do about it. You have to be prepared for it. But some decks are just so powerful that can just beat everything, like Q-Block, yeah. for instance. So Conquest is just better, but in general you use the same decks in both lineups right now, at least, and you just tend to play the best decks, because the best decks are the best decks for a reason.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have actually just embraced HSReplay.net as like the tool. Fun fact is that almost anti-complexity has used the four highest win rate decks from HSReplay. They admitted it. They just copied the list. And
really?
All of them
I've never heard
yeah.
that. Wow.
That's 7-2. Like Casey yes. did it, and Tyler did it, and they all just went up 16 easy.
There you go. I don't think we've had as strong of an endorsement for HSReplay.net on the show than just straight up that. Yeah, that's awesome. That's I'm glad. You know, I'm glad we can be a tool for, you know, just the pro players in that way. Yeah, that's so best decks, guys. I mean, it has performed the best. Like we've seen the last two HCT events, and it's shown that statistically that's been the best thing so far. All right, Amadan has a question. Watching Token Druid mirror match between Zalay and Nizek was very skill intensive. What is the most skillful mirror match in the history of Hearthstone? Whew. This is a good one. Oh, Raiden has a question too. I'll get that one. Man, mirror matchup. I think, there's been a lot of them, man. There's been a lot of good ones.
The old Handlock Mirror was ridiculously skillful.
Yeah, old Handlock Mirror. I think Patron was even really good.
No, I think Patron was a problem with Coin and who got the death bite with the Patron in a rage. It was like...
Oh, really? Okay.
It already started with being like draw RNG, you know?
Oh,
draws the nuts.
Yeah. Freeze Mage. That's a good one. We've had some of our most epic matches have been Freeze Mage versus Freeze Mage. So,
yeah, that was pretty good. I like a lot of the old, very old mirrors. Mm-hmm. The very old Control Priest mirrors, Control Paladin mirrors, where you had finite resources, where you had to use every single card, like where hero powering, maximizing hero powering was like game deciding. And
yeah, we didn't have cards that created infinite. You know, just number infinite yeah, value at the end, basically. Those were really, really good. I think it's generally control matchups
as well.
Yeah, control matchups I think were really good. Any aggro versus aggro matchups that were crazy?
Absolutely.
Skill intensive.
The first mirror enchanted mirrors were insanely, zoom mirrors were insanely skill intensive.
Yeah, like all those are underrated, man. I think that the shaman, you know, like the abuse is just the shaman error. Yeah, the mid-range shaman error. That mirror matchup, I think pros all will say, was one of the most skill-intensive matchups that's ever existed. So those were totally underrated, like as to how good of a matchup those were. That's a good question, though. So we got Raydan here. He's got a question. Do you think data mining is good or bad for the game? In any update, Blizzard cannot really surprise us. As all cards like new arena cards will be discovered right away. Only Tavern Brawl rules, etc. seem to be obscured. All expansion releases have to be revealed prior to, etc. I mean, your question is just about general data mining, meaning like when they release, say, an update onto the client, obviously, you know, us, you know, HSReplay.net and other folks that are, you know, doing cool tools or whatever, are able to see, you know, what some of these cards are. And, you know, some have been leaked in the past, like a lot of the, whatchamacallit, I forget what they were called, jeez. The cards that were, it was like leaked not too long ago in an update, like about a month or two ago in an update, where they didn't really mean to leak those cards and they ended up being leaked and everybody was able to see them. It can be bad. I mean, it's tough for a developer. You know, it's generally, you know, I guess it would be nice not to do them, but at the same time, we aren't able to prepare, say, like HS Replay quick enough. You know, like you're not going to have the data either, you know, like when it first comes out, like the day of a release. So I don't know. I don't think it's bad. It's restrictive in a way. Sure. Like that's why they have to do release the cards beforehand and not just completely surprise us. But I don't know. I think we've come up with a really good system to make it worthwhile. We create a month worth of discussion by revealing the cards one at a time, you know, like, or three at a time each day. That's like some of the most exciting times in our community is that month before it, right? And they have to do it because of, you know, this kind of reason. It's turned into just like, you know, an actual marketing opportunity now. So overall, I think that it's positive, but you know, there isn't, it's not without any kind of penalty, of course. Any thoughts on that, Gar? Like any data mining, like any thoughts, good or bad?
I think it's 2018. You just gotta adjust. It's yeah. Like you can't just pretend to be living in the stone ages.
Yeah.
Just, you know, the companies have to adjust. That's all there is to it.
Yeah.
I think it's good.
Yeah. I mean, even if let's just say we were surprised right now, like on the day of release, that surprise lasts for like a day. You know, like eventually we'll know what the cards are. You know, whether it's us or Hearthbone or somebody on Reddit just posting a list of all the cards and what they are, it's going to happen like within the matter of 24 hours. So you literally get surprised for a day when it's released.
It was still so exciting when you didn't know. When, like, the first
it is. But it lasts so. It's just so fleeting though. It's like, yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. But, yeah. That's like the beta days back in the days. Stone ages. Okay. Yeah. So Pyrotechnics has a question. For those looking to make a climb to Legend, is it better to stick with a single deck or to try and swap around based on a given meta? Well, if you have the data as to what's good at each rank, you know, like, you know,
is there like
certain site that has that kind of data, you know, then I think it is more optimal to play just what is good at your specific, say, rank 3, you know, and what you want to play there, you know, because you can always just look at like what's popular even at rank 3, you know, kind of shows you. And then, so
it
you
looks like a very nice website. Where can we find this?
I'm not sure where you can find this. I'm not sure. It's no, HSReplay.net has all the stuff for you. But to answer your question, it's more optimal to play a deck that's going to, you know, if you know what's popular at your rank, you should just play that, right? Like that totally should be, you know, what you're playing. It's not that you can't get there if you just play just a good deck, period. Because if you look, you know, in the different ranks, you'll notice that Even Shaman is just, I mean, if you played Even Shaman, you're probably pretty safe. Well, actually, Even Shaman takes a pretty big dip here at rank 1.
That was a bad example.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all the way up to rank 1. All the way up to rank 1, you know? Like, and then get, you know, so rank 1, this is interesting, right? Rank 1, Even Shaman is countered hard. But then when you get to, like, Legend, just all of Legend, Even Shaman comes
up. Oh, maybe that's why I didn't get my final star.
Yeah. You're not using the side enough, boy. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, Pyra, definitely try to get that premium feature. Yeah, well, yeah. So, good question, though. I think everybody had some good questions today. But that's it for Q&A. That's pretty much it. Anything else we have?
Was that the final question? I want to add to that because people ask me about climbing to Legend all the time.
Yeah.
And I always say it depends. Like, when people say, for example, just a very general question that comes up very often, is Big Spam Mage a good deck to climb to Legend, right? So then first, it depends on region to region. Usually the meta is slightly different on NA, Asia, and EU. And on hsreplay.net, you can actually search for your particular region and see what people are playing in your region.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that one day, Big Spam Mage is a good deck to play because there's a lot of Even Shamans, Odd Paladins, and decks like that. But on the other day, you face a lot of Token Druids and Quest Warriors, and you just get countered by it. And I think instead of just forcefully trying to climb with Mage and getting countered multiple games in a row, you should definitely switch. I think Hearthstone right now is definitely a game of mastering multiple decks, not just one deck. It's just like the what the game has evolved into. I would say back in the days, you could really stick to one deck, you know. But right now, I think you should definitely play multiple decks.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get a way to really show this in the future. But there really is, you know, there are play trends in Hearthstone. Like, there are certain decks that are played more, you know, right now you can kind of see just with the various, you know, like HS Replay or whatever tools that you're using, you can see that there are just general decks played at different ranks, but there's actually different decks played at different times too. Like, even within the day, forget even the day of the week, within the day itself too. Like, there are different decks being played and different decks, you know, winning at a higher win rate. So, you know, eventually, you know, I hope to get us or get to the point where we can, you know, present that to you guys, because we, you know, we have that data too. And you can actually modify your pick based even to that kind of granularity. And that's obviously going to give you the best chance to win. You know, like, if you know that Token Druid is played, you know, 5% more late at night, then you're going to want to try to counter it, you know, more so late at night than you do early in the day. And I, even personally, in my experience, I've noticed that. Like, I've definitely had times where whatever popular, like, whether it was Odd Paladin or Even Paladin or whatnot, it's played much more early in the day, like when there's just more traffic, I think, in the game for me, than it is late at night. Late at night, I found that most people that I play against play control decks for whatever reason. So, like, I've noticed, like, I can climb better if I just can counter control decks late at night. And then, you know, during the day, it's a little bit more of a mix, but so I don't really expect to climb as much during the day. So it's kind of funny. It happens in every game too. Like, I know Overwatch is the same. I remember I used to talk to Flame on my other Overwatch podcast when he used to be on a bunch, and he would say, yeah, man, like, the during this time of night, man, that is the time where you just don't play at all. You just definitely don't play at all, because you're not going to be climbing at all, you know, with that. So I think it happens in every single game. It's just, you know, I think we might have the ability to show it a bit better, you know, just with some of the tools we have and just how the game, the ladder is for Hearthstone compared to other games. But, so yeah.
It's definitely become more competitive overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say.
It's a little bit trickier right now too, when we have, like, the meta, it's so diverse. You have so many different decks right now. So you can't really just focus on a single deck, because there's so many different ones being played right now. It can be a little tough. So to that point, you know, like, it might actually not be, you know, I think you could have some success too, just playing a good deck. You know, if there's a bunch of them, you know, happening right now, but you have to grind no matter what. So it's going to happen. You're gonna have to play a good number of games anyways. I think what's the least amount of games played to Legend? What's the record? Like, we should have these records, you know? Like, why don't we have them anywhere? It would be so cool to see.
It has changed with the new rank system.
But even the new rank system, we should have the record for that. Like, I think 44. I've heard somebody get there in 44.
Pokrovac linked a tweet where he said he didn't lose a game from rank 4 to Legend.
Okay, so 25, right?
He entered as rank 1 Legend.
Yeah, so would that just be... That's 25, right? 25 games? Have you started at rank 5?
5-0. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, 25. Yeah, 25-0. Okay. Can't get better than that. That's like a perfect... But you can be on, say, like, the perfect 25 list. Or 21? Was it 21? You start at 4? Oh, you start at 4, right, when you're a legend. Yeah. So 21-0, you can be in the 21-0 list, you know? Like, that'd be... I'm sure there's not many people on the 21-0 list. That'd be a pretty prestigious list to be on.
Yeah, and he did it on the third day also, and still entered this rank 1 Legend, which is, like, super cool.
It doesn't matter when you do it. It just matters.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Because you don't know how the MMR system works, they're, like, all secrets of Blizzard.
Well, yeah, we had that whole discussion, right, months ago. That's crazy. Actually, any last questions? We'll take, like, any others if anybody wants to get any last minute questions in. We flew through the show today, man. We, like, flying, just the two of us, man. We don't have to wait, you know, like, we don't have a third person giving the bloody opinions. No, I'm just kidding.
We need the Brit again on the show
now. We need a Brit. Yep. Trying to. A lot of them are busy right now. So, what makes Even Shaman so good? Ooh, okay. That's a good question. There's like variants. There's different variations of even shaman too.
Flame tongue totem.
Flame tongue totem?
Flame totem is nuts, actually. I just realized today from playing a lot of even shaman how good actually flame tongue totem is, especially with one mana totems. It is good with two mana totems, but if one mana totem is curving out. And another thing is, one drops and two drops suck right now. And this is perfect for shaman. Like, the weakness of shaman is, like, the strength of shaman and the weakness of shaman is, like, how well people curve out against it and how well you curve out. And if you're dominating the board from the start, then shaman shines.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the two key cards in the current list are definitely Corpse Taker. Yeah, Corpse Taker and Flame Tongue Totem.
Wow.
And you can just kill people so fast. It's ridiculous. They go uncontested, you just kill them. Hagata is actually, you still have like a lot of value in the deck with cards like Hagata. And with just a two-card combo, the Echo Murloc and Hagata, you actually have an infinite value mechanic as well in a more tempo slash aggro.
I guess if you get that chain. But generally speaking, Hagata's not infinite. Yeah, it really...
Yeah, but you have so many minions that you will eventually get one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is super cool, and this is then a different playstyle you have against like Big Spell Mage. And another reason why Even Shaman in particular is performing really well right now is all people mulligan against Spiteful Shaman right now on Ladder, at least, just because it's the most popular archetype. I think it's the overall most played deck on rank 3 to Legend, and so people have to automatically mulligan for Shadowwalk Shaman, and then you mulligan Bong, you don't keep like Hellfires and stuff, you just, I don't know, go for curve or for like discard, like maybe even keep Naturalize for mill, and then you suddenly have to face like a super aggressive Flame Tongue Totem curve and die.
Yeah. I have to say, you know, I think one card that's underrated in this deck is Earth and Might. I think it's even Earthening Might a totem is strong. It's done well for me, even just that play, especially if it's like a healing
totem. Taker.
Yep, or the Corpse
Taker. Flame Tongue and Earth Might is like a 9 damage guy that hits for twice, which is 18 damage. And it's like oftentimes used as a kill.
It's super flexible, and it has value late too. And you can draw that card, you know, whatnot. So I think that card is actually really good. But to your point with Flame Tongue Totem, I think that Wolf too, like both of them, Flame Tongue Totem obviously being better because it buffs more. But anything that just buffs minions, you know, left and right, is really strong in this deck. And, you know, it's because of Primal Fins. It's crazy how Primal Fins just get let go sometimes. People just let them go because, you know, they have some type of removal that can remove, you know, like one damage across the board. So I feel like Primal Fins have lived longer in this stage of Hearthstone than we've ever seen. So you only have Flame Tongue Totem and Dire Wolf Alpha to buff these for the most part benign minions, so being able to do that I think is like super important. You have to be super careful with like when you play them too, because you're not going to always get them. So I think that's what makes it strong. I mean, the late game is pretty good too. Like Alakir is great, like as a finisher, you know, especially if you still have your second Flame Tongue around, and Kalamos, you know, like, do that extra damage to the face if you need to, you know, like that's definitely great. Or even if you need to just remove whatever's on the board. So
and it also punishes greed, which is amazing.
It
does.
That's true. It you know, I do have to say that I do feel, I don't know if Frogbound, you're like surprised that it's good or not, or you know, was confused as to why it's good. I still feel like that sometimes when I look at it. I'm just like, I've played this deck enough and I know it's actually good, you know, but I can't really put a finger sometimes on just why. And it does feel like there's a lot of different things. You know, it's not a very synergized deck. It's like a lot of just different stuff going on at different points of this deck, which usually means it's a bad deck, you know, historically speaking. Like if things aren't just like streamlined perfectly, or even just like synergized perfectly with the minions and how it's built, it feels like that. But, you know, with this deck and with some of the other Baku and Gen decks, it just breaks that paradigm, you know? And the totem, I don't feel like makes a huge difference. So sometimes I do always have to like check myself and try to think again as to why this deck is good. But clearly, I've had tons of success with it. It's just crazy, crazy good. Yeah, Hagatha. What kind of what spell from Hagatha do you find yourself loving? You know, when you get, or just like you're just like, oh man, I'm just so used to getting this. You know, it's like really, really good.
Bloodlust.
Okay. Wind Fury too. God, I never get Wind Fury. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, you just kill people. It's great. Like, this is basically the only cards this deck is lacking, and then you get them from Hagatha. Then the deck is absolutely amazing.
Well, I get my share.
Any burst damage, like Lava Burst is super good too.
I don't get Totemic Mind a ton, but I get the freeze one a ton, dude. The +3/+3 freeze one. I feel like I get that all the time, man. It's like, man, it's brutal. Yeah, because you never need
I'll
that.
I'll buff the Flametongue Totem if I can.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, because it can be frozen.
Okay. Yeah, it can, but I'm never in a situation where that's that plays there for me. I'm usually having to react to shit that they're doing. Or yeah, Gone Fishing too. Gone Fishing is the one card that literally does nothing for you. It sucks.
I feel like, I don't know if it for you is the same, but when I play this Even Shaman and when I play Spiteful Shabok Shaman, my Hagathas feel completely different. I feel like with Shadowbox Shaman, I get so many healing rains, like all the time healing rain.
That's nice.
And with this deck, I get like a bunch of like Frost Shocks, Lava Bursts. And just
I never get healing rain, not come to think of it. I can't even remember the last time I've gotten healing rain.
With Even Shaman, I've never gotten healing rain either.
Yeah, I come to think of it,
but
I've never
Shadow
gotten
all the time.
Wow, that's crazy.
All the time. Yeah. It's like the most popular. Like when I need heal, I just know I have to go for Agatha. I will just get a healing rain. It's that common. Sometimes I have like five healing rains in my hand.
Nice. God.
It's weird.
Five healing rains?
God, like it's the
crazy.
Most common spell you get from Shadow Auction.
Yeah, this is all like Hearthstone perception here. This is all like the warped perception we all have of what we get.
Or is it?
right. I don't know. It could be. You could be right, man. It could be hidden. We might have to actually do an article on that, right? And see if we're actually getting all the shaman cards at regular rates or not. Maybe they've tweaked those too. Who knows? All right. Well, that's going to be it, guys, for the show. I think we're going to wrap up here. Definitely great. We covered a bunch of stuff. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed it. Gara, you want to do some shouts before we take off?
Shout outs to my Instagram, Garbage Shaman. I post there. I stream every day, twitch.tv/GarbageShaman. My Twitter, I tweet every day as well. Just follow me on Facebook, every social media I use them all, Discord, whatever. Shout outs to the lovely viewers as always. Mm-hmm. Hope they still had a lot of fun, even though we didn't have like a guest on. Shout outs to you for this amazing show.
Oh, thanks, man.
Peace.
Right back at you, man. Thanks for doing the show with me. And sometimes it's just nice doing it as the two of us, I have to say. I know a lot of all the viewers, or most of the viewers, like, you know, when we have guests, and it just creates a different dynamic for discussion. But sometimes it's, you know, it's just good to just have the two of us talk about stuff. And it's always nice that we can always fall back on that whenever we need to. But yeah, thanks to all the patrons. Thanks to Dollar Shave Club and hsreplay.net, of course. And you can find the VODs for this on youtube.com/hsreplaynet. You can also find it on my channel, ChainManV, if you want to look there. You can follow the show on Twitter, which I always forget to plug it. It's ValueTownGG. And follow there, because we always, you know, I try to always post at least, you know, who we're going to have and just what we're going to be doing on the show on that account. And then you can find us on all the audio channels. That includes iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud.com/ChamMV. Leave us a review if you like us, and because it really, really helps out. And I think that's going to be it, guys, for this week. So for Gara, ChamMV, ChamMV, myself, that's weird. So we'll see you next week. Later.